Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Welcome to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. It is that time once again for a little bump, 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 culinary CPR with yours truly and my cohort of kitchen conundrums, Chef Luca Paris. You know him, you love him. You've seen him on Food Network where he totally dominates winning things like Guy's Grocery Games. But did you know that he's not just a superstar on the television? This guy actually cooks. You can visit him in Keene, New Hampshire at Luca's Mediterranean Cafe where he, just has been restaurateur of the year. That's all. And as I said, catch him now because, you know, he travels the world teaching, cooking, showing folks how to do things right, make things delicious. But if you catch him this summer, I think he's actually still there cooking. That's right. Isn't it, Chef? They can get something you've crafted in the kitchen in between your superstar headlining debuts that here and there.
Every day, every shift, I'll be in here cooking something, whether it's at my market or my restaurant. And it's been an amazing, you know, it's owning a restaurant for the last, well, I've pretty much been in the business since I've been a kid, but owned my own place since I've been 21. And now I'm like, God, I'm almost 50. Wouldn't that happen? Anyway, so you get, you know, doing all these years, but I had a good string there where I was able to get out very often. And lately I've been in the kitchen for the last 3 months again. And I got to tell you, I love it. It's inspiring. All the new ideas that come your way or, you know, changing the way you look at something or, I don't know. I just did a little tasting for someone the other night. People just come in and I always leave it open. You said, if they say, just make me whatever, I'll make you whatever. And, you know, everything from I had some marrow from the lamb neck bones because I braised lamb necks for my gyros. I don't know if I ever told you about that. But anyway, I have marrow from the bones, and I did like a marrow.
Okay,
bruschetta.
That recipe, we are stealing that recipe next week, my friend.
Wait, there's very little of that to recipe on. But the I love braising meats, and I'm a big fan of that. And I love bone marrow, and that's our staff meal. Usually, what I was saying is, I made them a four-course dinner that had nothing to do with my regular menu. And at the end, I came out, and I said, how was everything? And they did it last year with me. And they said, wow, things have changed a little bit in your head. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, there's different flavors you're playing with. And I didn't even realize it till I mentioned it. But it is. If I look at what I did a year ago and now in the kitchen, it's really different. Because I think we, like artists, even though to me it's you're a craftsman versus an artist in the kitchen because you need to put together something again and again and again the same way. But like artists, we tend to kind of change our flavor profile a little bit with how we feel or how we're doing or even as we go. You know, I had my chicken thigh period instead of my blue period or whatever, that kind of thing. But it's really interesting to hear what other people say about my food when I'm making it. And people who know it so well. And there has been, I feel like it's been a renaissance for me these last 3 months in the kitchen again.
Well, I've always considered you a renaissance man to start with.
Oh, yeah,
so.
Okay.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think there has to be an individual evolution because if you're not growing, you're not exploring, you're not challenging yourself, then I think you're simply dying, right. You know, in all aspects of our life. And as you and I have talked about often, you know, for us, you know, food is a reflection of life. It's a reflection of our lives. You know, and what's interesting, what you bring up is, you know, I was talking just the other day to someone about my book that's coming out, Ancient Eats, and we were talking about Italian cuisine. And you know, I said, well, tell me, you know, what your thoughts are on Italian cuisine. And it was, you know, pasta and everything, you know, sort of tomatoes. And I said, well, do you realize that Italian cuisine has only had tomatoes for, you know, about 500 years. Exactly. So if you think of the Romans, they didn't have, you know, a spaghetti sauce. They right. didn't know what a tomato was, cause it's a New World item. Yet there was this huge, you know, you think of Italian food today and you tell me you're the expert, but I can't think of Italian food, you know, without the image of something tomato popping up in my head. And it's probably just because I'm in love with San Marzano tomatoes, but
well,
be that
yeah,
as
it
may.
and that's it, though. I mean, and what people don't realize is, and you know, you speak to it all the time, is that foods evolved basically about by what has transpired through history too, and that does. We can't think of, I mean, if you name the five, if someone told me or told you to name, or anyone, to name five Italian dishes off the top of your head, I will guarantee you that all five, if not four out of five, will have a tomato product in it. Because you're going to say red sauce or marinara sauce. You're going to say pizza. Someone's going to say bolognese. Someone's going to say lasagna. Yeah. Not one of those are thought of without a tomato sauce in there. You know, so that's right where they're going to go to. You know, and if you're from Italy, you might not always mention tomato, but you'll go with a risotto and or something like that, or, you know, a Milanese or something. But it's amazing when you think of Italian food, tomato is one of those standard byproducts or products that are used every day. And 500 years ago, it wasn't. It's really incredible to think. And I still have people that when we teach and we talk about where things come from, how it develops, and I mentioned the tomato, they're still flabbergasted. I'm like, how do you not know this by now? You know, it's like, it's amazing to see people's eyes go, are you kidding me? They've had marinara sauce in there since the Romans. I go, no, not really. There's no
not
way.
So much.
There's no way. So, but it's really cool. And to talk about evolving food together, I love the dish you prepared for us today.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, talking of evolving, or in my case, totally poaching your recipe, pun intended, folks. You know, I took your, because I absolutely loved your peanut sauce.
Thank you.
One of my all-time favorite peanut sauces. So what I did was I went to the market, and I had actually been up the day before with some local craft butchers and helping them break down and learning some butchery skills myself in terms of lamb and pork. And so these were actually some pork tenderloins I had helped break down. And I literally knew the animal, the quality animal, et cetera, and got my hands on these incredible pork tenderloins. I said, well, you know, what can I do with them? And also in the market, a bunch of melons had come in. And, you know, when I first sort of proposed this dish, people kind of looked at me and they're like, cantaloupe and pork, really?
Right.
I don't know, but you think about prosciutto and you know, wrapped melon balls, and nobody thinks twice about that. And that's just that salty, porky flavor, the sweet yieldingness of the ripe melon. And I thought it would go very well. And I got to tell you, this is like one of my favorite dishes. So what we did, we took some pork tenderloins, we marinated them in about half a cantaloupe that I just mashed up with a potato masher, some garlic, wine or sake, a little lime, salt, pepper, ginger, a little kaffir lime, coconut milk, honey, a little rice wine vinegar for a little acidity. And then I also added, and folks could use whatever they liked. I mean, if you like chili powder, you could add that. I used a little sambal oleg, which is an Asian chili-based chili paste. But, you know, again, you could use whatever you wanted. And so we let that marinate overnight to really get those flavors, seared the loins off, finished them in the oven, super simple, and just did it with a very basic stir fry. I got some soba noodles, which is Japanese buckwheat noodles, and just what I could get at the market again, some garlic scapes, some Swiss chard, some carrots. Then I picked up some water chestnuts and some baby corns, tossed that all with a little bit of sesame oil, and, you know, served the dish with your incredible peanut sauce on top. And it was absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. And I got to tell you, too, we had the whole pork loin, so we had some left over. It makes a great sort of cold salad the next day. Just mix it up fresh.
The first thing I was going to say to you is, how does that taste as a salad? Because it sounds phenomenal as a cold salad. It just seems like it works. Now, I don't know. I know, like, what I've heard where papaya has this ability to tenderize meat. Does the melon do the same thing or does not?
It does not because it just adds to the flavor. So the pork tenderloin, which, you know, is very, very lean. It's one of the leanest cuts of the pork. You know, so it stayed nice and firm. You know, I sliced it thin on the bias and a nice, you know, we put it in the skillet to brown it, then just finished in the oven. So it had a nice complex of flavors. The cantaloupe just added sort of these background notes of sweetness. And then I served with the salad a little bit of a sliced cantaloupe. And when you ate the pork and the cantaloupe and the noodles and sort of the sesame and the heat, it was a sort of wonderful sweet, sour, spicy combination, which to me, You know, when I've gotten good Thai food, I've never been to Thailand, I must confess, but when I've gotten what I think is good Thai food,
right.
it always has that, you know, you always sort of sit in the middle of these great contrasting flavors. So you get sweet, you get sour, you get spicy, you know, and it sort of just all kind of comes together very well balanced. And the cantaloupe added those just kind of floral sweet notes, you know, not too much, but just in the background there, you know, along with the pork and the more what we would consider the more traditional Asian flavors.
It's absolutely wonderful. What I love about this is my wheelhouse, you know, is Mediterranean. So going out of it sometimes takes a lot. But my wife, is one of her favorite things is Thai food. And being able to bring her a dish like this is going to be a lot of fun. Once I start getting home more often, she's going to have this for dinner really soon. I'm telling you.
Well,
it's really
nice. It is your peanut sauce, man, that makes the dish.
Wow.
I mean, it's perfectly balanced, and it you know, adds that earthiness, that deliciousness with the peanuts, and it's just phenomenal. So, you know, like I said, you know, I totally poached it, but I was like, gosh, you know, I can't make a better peanut sauce than Luca, so I'll just steal it, but I'll give him credit. So it's not really stealing.
In the event that we just did a wedding, we did the peanut sauce, and they had a peanut allergy, but they also were gluten-free. We used sunflower butter.
Interesting.
And it came out very good. I think the sunflowers are a little bit lighter in flavor than the peanuts would be. But I really liked it. So for people that are gluten-free, peanut allergies, or those type of things, they're not easy to find, sunflower butter. It's probably something you find online. But we were able to use that. And I've also, I think I told you once, for a peanut allergy, I did it with cookie butter. A little bit sweeter with that.
Oh.
You ever have cookie butter?
I have not. I have not.
Okay. Basically, it's ground up butter cookies. It's an Eastern European delicacy that comes in a jar. And I made that dish first for Roland Foods. They had asked me to come up with a recipe for it. Every other recipe they got was about a dessert. So I decided to put it in my peanut sauce. And it actually worked out okay. So if you don't want to use it with peanuts, you could use cookie butter or sunflower butter. Oh, but there are a lot of great butters out there in the market. But this is pretty awesome. And I like really good peanut butters, too, for it. I think, I don't know what type of peanut butter you usually use, but
I make my own. So I get some fresh roasted salted peanuts, and I put them. I have a juicer, and for folks can probably do this in their food processor as well. But I have a juicer where it's got a setting that you can grind things like nuts. So I get the ribbons of peanuts, and then I'll put that in a food processor, and it's usually just a little too dry to be sort of really peanut butter. So what I add back is usually just a little bit of sesame oil and maybe a dab of peanut oil if I need it. But usually just a little bit of sesame oil because it kind of gives it an extra nutty zing to it. And then if I want, I'll put a little bit of honey in it to kind of sweeten it up a little bit. And so I always end up making my own. And, you know, I don't have to worry about it spoiling because it's gone in the refrigerator, you know, before it can possibly spoil. Because this time of year, we're getting all these fresh berries in and, you know, raspberries, blueberries, huckleberries, you know, making the jams. Again, there's some pectin. I don't know if folks know, but if you don't want to use the sugars, which I recommend you don't, there is a particular type of pectin on the market for making jams where you can use natural honey. And it gives the jam a much more complex flavor. Plus, you're getting, I think you and I have talked about, all the benefits of honey that you don't get with a pure sweetener such as sugar or sucrose.
And that's absolutely wonderful. So when you're making this dish, you know, one of the things I noticed you do, too, is you sear the tenderloin on all sides. I wanted to touch base with that because when you were talking about preparing it, as opposed to there are people that will just throw the tenderloin in the oven, it just makes a big difference when you're searing it on all sides, especially with the marinade, right?
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but I think that is one of, you know, if we were sharing and sort of giving away, which you and I do, we're generous chefs.
That's what we do.
We give away our chef secrets. You know, that's something, that little extra step. I know, folks, I know it's one extra dirty pan, but you have a dishwasher. I know you do. You know, it makes such a big difference in the complexity of the flavors. And like you said, particularly when it's marinated like that, you know, it just gives it both in taste and in texture, which in this dish I think is particularly important, because, you know, you've got the sort of soft yielding noodles, you've got, you know, the vegetables which are sauteed, so they're kind of soft, you've got your wonderful creamy peanut sauce, you've got the soft sweet cantaloupe, so that little bit of texture that you get on the meat goes along with the bite from the corn and the crispness of the water chestnuts to give you some textural diversity, you know, in the bites, as well as a whole layer of complex flavor. So I think, you tell me what you think, but, you know, to me, that's a chef's secret. You know, I almost never just put something in the oven. I most, even, as you say, I love to braise.
Right.
You know, I'll put it in the pan and brown it so I get that layer of complex flavors. Then it can braise for a couple hours.
I think what we find by doing that is that, now, they'll, you know, it used to be said, well, you're searing in all the juices. You're not searing in anything. You're just searing in flavor, especially if you season it well on the outside. I did short ribs. You could easily just put short ribs on a bed of mirepoix, put some juice in it, throw it in the oven. You're going to cook them. My lamb necks the same way, but I've always seared them. I'll sear it, unless it's so big I can't get it into a pan, it will hit a pan before it ever goes in the oven. Even if it's just a simple chicken breast, there's people that throw chicken in the oven, or even pork tenderloin or pork loin. You know, a sear with a nice douse of seasoning on the outside or marinade, you're going to find a huge difference in the quality of product that you put out, and the flavor is intensified, like you just said. And I highly recommend it. Anytime someone tries something, try it the next time. If you do it normally without searing, try it the next time with searing. You're going to see a big difference. And even cook time, it'll start shortening the cook time. It'll keep things juicier. It really makes a big difference to me.
Yeah, I think so. And if folks want to try this recipe, head on over to cardiochef.com, subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get the recipes Luca and I share each week ahead of time before the show. So you can look them, and then you can tweet us questions anytime online. We'll be happy to answer them on air as well. But if you're going to try this recipe, I think you take Luca's suggestion. If you haven't seared before, take half the tenderloin and sear it. Take the other half, just pop it in the oven, and then compare and contrast the difference. And I think the taste will definitely sell the extra step that's involved.
Yeah, and that's a big key. And I love when we're able to give that, these little like ideas to these people, because it's important for them to really enjoy cooking, getting that final product, because it's going to make you want to do it again. I got to tell you a quick story. My son's been working with me. He's 14 years old. Now we only have a minute or two, but he's 14 years old, and I showed him just some difference that the way his mom and I cook. And when he's home at night with mom, and I'm always at work, you know, I don't get to be home as much as I should because of restaurant, but now he's been working with me, and he goes, Dad, you sear everything. And that's funny, we had this conversation. He goes, you cook everything first before you put it in the oven. Mom just puts my pork or whatever in the oven. I go, buddy, taste the difference. So I'll sear off a piece of chicken, and I'll let him taste it. He goes, that has a lot of flavor. I was like, yes, there's a major difference. And don't get me wrong, before anybody says anything, my wife's an amazing cook. There's just a couple of things that...
Good,
kept from it.
Good recovery, chef. Good recovery, chef.
Trust me, I eat her food all the time. But it was really interesting to see that he's getting it. He's understanding when he sees me cooking some of the nuances, and it's so much fun having him stand by me in the kitchen. Because I think I want to learn how to cook. So
Xander's a smart kid. He takes after his dad, you know. So
He's a smart kid. He takes after his mom, but luckily he's smart like that.
I absolutely enjoyed having you on, and thank you again for allowing me to poach your recipe. Folks, go to www.lucaparis.com and check out what Chef is up to, www.cardiochef to see what I am up to. And until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne. You're listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.